You're listening to the Stuff Smart People Like
Bonus
Podcast. We think it's smart, so should you.
Hey, Smarties. It's your old pal Ed here. We're bringing you a bonus podcast this week.
Yay!
Our old friend Paul, the Skeptical Statistician, you can check out his website, theskepticalstatistician.blogspot.com, is running a little bit of a Kickstarter, and he's using the money from the Kickstarter to create his own ebook wherein he tries to quantify Star Wars, which I think is pretty neat. And it is also something that we did on a podcast where he was the guest. We talked about a series of posts from his blog about just that fact, just that topic, just that idea. And that was way back in episode 44 or so. It was called Luke, I Am Your Quantifier. So Paul's got this Kickstarter going. As I said, you can check it out on his website, and you can contribute to that if it sounds like something you'd be of interest in. If you're still kind of like, I'm not sure if I'm interested in that. I like Star Wars, but do numbers belong in art? I'm not sure. Well, then you can check out the discussion on this bonus podcast. I've taken it back from the archives, brought it out, dusted it up. It was pretty dirty. And spliced it in here right after I get done yammering. I hope you enjoy the discussion. I cut out all the smart suggestions, so it's a little bit shorter than a standard episode, but it's Star Wars, so it's more or less timeless. And here it is, a discussion with Paul about Star Wars. Have you guys played the Angry Birds Star Wars, by the way?
No, I haven't played it yet.
It's pretty excellent.
Is it? I just figured it was just Angry Birds with hats.
Isn't it Angry Birds Space with Star Wars?
I don't know, there's cool stuff. I haven't played Angry Birds Space, so I don't know. But like you get to use the Force Push with the Obi-Wan Kenobi bird.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, so you can like get the bird to fly over, and then you can have him like Force Push stuff over. Nice. You get to use one of the like Luke bird has a lightsaber that spins so you can cut through stuff. The Chewbacca one, my favorite, it just like goes and it like just it just plows through everything.
He sounds so weird. Yeah. You know, they should actually just have like the Millennium Falcon as a thing you put in a slingshot and
if you do really well, you can convert any of your birds into the Millennium Falcon and it just comes in and just blows shit up.
Nice.
It's so excellent.
Well, it is a bird.
Oh, this.
So. And it's not Obi-Wan Kenobird.
She doesn't look like much. She got it where it counts.
It actually, the art in between, like they do art to match up with the original trilogy, and it's kind of funny just to see the birds like illustrated as the characters, you know.
Oh, I was gonna say, at what point in the Star Wars story does Angry Birds take place?
Yeah.
Oh, it's totally it starts at New Hope.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Yeah. That's presumptuous of them.
Yeah,
there's an X-Wing. The X-Wings have, instead of the X-Wings, they're slingshots on each side, and the Millennium Falcon has a slingshot on the top of it.
Nice.
It's awesome.
You should have one on the top and bottom, really. But anyway.
What level of canon are we talking about here? This has got to be D canon.
There's yeah, different thank levels. You. Yeah, they are, yeah.
Do they do, the circular wipes and the slash wipes to move you from screen to screen?
A little bit. I think they have a little bit of that, but you know, between the transitions from like each level to level, I'm trying to think of like some of the cooler things that are on there. I played the original Angry Birds and then this one. I've not played anyone in between, so I don't know how much of the stuff is just carried over from other games. But I don't know. They're like,
Jen's a pretty big fan of it. I might have to ask
her. The Han Solo bird shoots three lasers.
Nice. Does it shoot first?
Yes. I haven't gotten to the Hoth level yet, though. That's the next one I need to get to.
I saw a commercial for the like in real life Angry Bird sets where you set them up and then like throw things at them and knock them down.
Oh yeah, I saw that too.
The toys.
One of it was a AT-AT from Hoth. That's just.
Oh nice.
But it just seems so weird that. The entire point of this toy is you just set it up and then throw something at it.
Knock it down.
That's hysterical.
Just get the game. Get the game.
Yeah. There's a special toy you have to buy to knock over.
Yeah, just get some boxes and a tennis ball.
Right. Yeah.
Paint a little face on it.
Got
Or any of your old toys. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, there's also there's an R2-D2 and a C-3PO bird, and they the R2-D2 just like shocks stuff, and the C-3PO bird just like explodes, and the pieces hit everything.
Oh, it explodes? That's way more active than R2-D2 ever was in the series.
Well, it's C-3PO is the one that explodes.
Or I'm sorry.
Did I say that wrong?
No. I said it wrong.
But I haven't gotten the Princess Leia bird yet, so I don't know what it does. Probably just complains a lot.
Ouch.
Kisses other birds.
Who may or may not be related to it.
Well, this is an excellent segue into exactly what we're going to talk about. How fortuitous that we would happen to be Indeed. Talking about this. So we brought Paul on. Paul is our guest. And we brought him on to speak about a project that he was working on and his blog, The Skeptical Statistician, which can be found once again at theskepticalstatistician.blogspot.com. And Paul is someone that went to grad school with some of these jokers over here. And, you know, obviously does a lot with statistics. So, Paul, can you just give us a kind of an idea of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good introduction there. The project you're talking about, in terms of the Star Wars stuff, I kind of got the idea when the news broke, I guess it was probably about a month ago now, that Disney had bought Lucasfilm and Skywalker Sound and ILM and all those things that are attached to Lucasfilm, and that they were going to make another trilogy. And it's basically, I think it's consensus in most circles that the prequels are a lot weaker than the original trilogy. So mm-hmm. one of the things that...
no argument here.
Yeah.
Does anybody wish to raise an argument to that point?
In terms of pure amount of CGI, I mean, I would say that the prequels blow the original movies out of the water with CGI use.
And Hayden Christensen exposure, definitely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And bare midriff.
Those are pretty cut and dry.
Right. If your quotient for mopiness is a big requirement.
So, but nothing beats... There's another trilogy that beats that one.
You do have to give the whininess factor. That sort of ends up right across the board.
That's fair.
Pretty about even.
I want to get some power converters.
Exactly. This is what we're talking about.
Winnetoshi Station.
Yeah.
So anyway, we could make plenty of jokes, but one of the things I wanted to see was if I could come up with some actual quantifiable things that you could point to and say, hey, this is one of the reasons that the prequel was weaker than the original trilogy. And so I started off, I watched Phantom Menace Episode 1 and then A New Hope Episode 4 and tried to draw some parallels between them. Seemed like that one, a lot of the stuff was about characters, things like that. And the next week did the same thing with Empire Strikes Back and then Attack of the Clones. And then this last week, it was posted today, was about Return of the Jedi and Revenge of the Sith. So each of those then was just looking at compared to each other. And as they progressed, I thought of more and more things to look at in each movie. So they got a bit longer and longer. It's one of those things that I think if I had known how much work it was going to be before I started, I might not have done it, but it was a lot of fun. And I think I did learn a lot about the movies by doing it. A lot of things that I hadn't really ever thought of. So
what's an example of something, maybe just going back to your first post, of something that we might be able to read in there? Maybe a comparison that you found that was rather telling of your hypothesis.
Well, so the first pairing of Phantom Menace and A New Hope, the biggest thing I looked at was basically the number of characters that show up in the movies, because New Hope has a pretty small cast of characters, and Phantom Menace, it just seems like everybody is just, there's people all over, they're throwing people in all over the place, and never really removing them. And in New Hope, when I... You know, they want to move on from a character, they'll often kill the character.
Mm-hmm.
And then remove that reason for, you know, people to be sticking around. Like Luke's Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru are killed pretty early on the movie, and then he has no reason to stay on Tatooine. He's able to leave with a pretty clean cut there. And that never really happens that much in Phantom Menace. But yeah, the number of characters is, I think it's on an order of 3 or 4 times as many characters in Phantom Menace than in New Hope.
Well, I think that's a really interesting observation. I would say, just from my memory of these movies, and I haven't seen any of them in a long time, although I did happen to catch just a tad of the of episode 3 at the gym the other day. It was just as bad as I remembered it.
Yeah, how did it work out for you?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say the thing that strikes me about the newer trilogy as opposed to the older trilogy is how metropolitan everything feels. Like, is that something that you saw, that it just, like, the settings were different for the movies, or how do they compare that way?
To some degree, and I think that's an interesting point there, that, you know, they are going to much larger cities. At the same time, though, there's a number of characters that are just secondary characters that are always kind of there and in frame or kind of in the background doing stuff that aren't really needed. Trying to think of a good example from the first one. I guess I forget the name of him, but there's the main villains, Newt Gunray, the Trade Federation guys, and then his second in command is always there, and he talks occasionally, but he's not really, there's really no reason for him to be there in episode 1 or the entire first trilogy. Like, he has no role, really. He's just adding space on screen to just have another body there to fill out the frame, so to speak.
Now, here's the real question, though. Did he get an action figure?
Oh, I'm sure he did. I'm sure that one of us could pull that up pretty quick on Google.
Mm-hmm. I found a few action figures that I posted into the chat.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's action figures of Uncle Owen and Nero.
Charred remains.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, actually, and that's an interesting point between the trilogies, too, is, I mean, you see Owen and Beru's charred skeletons laying on the ground. They're not afraid to kill people in these original films. In Phantom Menace, the most deaths come from the pod race.
I thought that was true. An interesting point you had. People that the pod race was more fatal than anything else in the episode.
Yeah. It's the end of episode 1. The number of characters that are, you know, unique, important characters that die are less than the number of characters that die in the pod race.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's basically just Darth Maul is at the end there.
And Qui-Gon.
Well, and Qui-Gon.
He gets stabbed.
Yeah, still, you got 2 versus, like, every other person in the pod
race. Yeah.
Or every other racer, at least. And many spectators, I'm sure.
Yeah, because there's that one point where one of the, like, engine goes into the crowd, right?
Yeah, there's just, it seems like a very dangerous sport.
Like real NASCAR.
Nah.
Well, and, you know, that's something that we could think could be explained merely by, you know, standards and practices. You know, which, I mean, standards and practices, that's more of a television thing, but... you know, the ratings codes and things of that. For whatever reason, mass death, which is caused by explosion, is much more acceptable than close-up, you know, sword-fighting death. So, you know, there's something about that works nowadays that they didn't used to really consider back in the day, I think.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You see that in the second film in... Attack of the Clones. A few more people die, but they all die in ways that are, and I find where I have it written down here, but they die in ways that there's no blood. It's not really anything that is really objectionable.
They're not like impactful deaths, an emotional kind of way.
The Queen's handmaiden dies in an explosion, and even Jango Fett that gets decapitated, it just, his suit kind of falls apart. All the CGI creatures that they kill, they just kind of fall apart.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything. There's no actually impact. The with lightsabers and all that, it just sort of like swipes through things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's very.
And when you get to like Attack of the Clones, you get just all robot deaths, basically. Like
it's true.
Tons and tons of robot deaths.
Well, and if you think about the first In Phantom Menace, the culmination of it is this field of robots fighting the Gungans that are all computer generated, and it's just going back and forth, and you know, there's no humans there. There's no actors really there. They might have done some motion capture stuff, but.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. Are the original films rated like PG and the new ones rated G, or
they're are they? All, I mean, they're all PG except for Revenge of the Sith is PG-13. I believe that's the only difference.
But and the reason, though, that the previous films might be rated differently has to do with the advent of the PG-13 rating, which I believe didn't come along until I want to say the Temple of Doom in the Indiana Jones trilogy, which would have been early 80s.
It would have been almost like late 80s. It was like 85, 86, something like that.
Mm, okay. Well, in any case,
yes,
I'm
right, because it says PG-13 came out in 1984. Hmm. So. I'd count that as mid-80s.
Oh, okay. So it's not early 80s. It's not the first half of the 80s. All right.
Yes.
Semantics. Moving on.
Even
the point is that didn't two or all three of these films come out before that?
Yeah, I think Jedi came out in, I want to say, 83?
Yes.
Which would have been before that. But I think even by today's standards, if you look at the original trilogy... I would suspect that those would probably still get PGs.
Mm-hmm.
Can't think of anything really off the top that's super objectionable. The charged skeletons is probably about the worst of it.
Yeah.
Incest?
Yeah. Oh, it's not incest.
They didn't even know.
No, it's close enough.
They didn't know.
Yeah, they didn't know.
There's very little substance to that accusation.
Well, it also, though, it makes it weird in Revenge of the Sith that you have these movies, the first two, that are really kind of PG, and you can kind of walk away from them and say, okay, I guess this was for the kids. That episode 3 has, you know, these very violent scenes where people's hands and arms are getting cut off all over the place, legs, they're being set on fire. It's all this really dark stuff that it just really comes out of nowhere after the first two movies.
Yeah, relatively. I like how you broke it down by scenes according to mood and comparing them.
Yeah, I thought that was that. I really
and it's just
a
pile in the third film.
Absolutely,
you know.
Yeah, so I did that. I started doing that in Empire. I hadn't really thought of it in the first set I did, and it was really interesting how much confusion dominated Attack of the Clones. That so much of it is people just wandering around. Just trying to figure stuff out and being really confused. But then episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, what was shocking is just how jumpy the scenes are, just how much it goes back and forth between all these different things, and just really has this really hasty feel to it.
Yeah, which is funny considering how much time they spent supposedly making it.
Well, and the thing that really strikes me about this graph of the mood of these two movies, and again, we're talking about Return of the Jedi and Revenge of the Sith, is that if you look at the action bar in Return of the Jedi, which I consider to be pretty action heavy when I think about it, it's very small. It's you have, what is it, like four maybe?
Yes, yep.
Yeah, four scenes, whereas the Revenge of the Sith has, I think,
22 or 23, I think, yeah.
And then you can also look at the very next mood down on the scale is suspense. And in Return of the Jedi, you have more than seven, somewhere around eight or nine. And in Revenge of the Sith, there are zero listed. Zero. And this isn't an error on your chart, is it? This is
no. I was actually pretty shocked when I I put the chart together, and obviously it was just pulling numbers from the coding I did. And then I started to look at it to be like, well, what is this chart telling me? For a second, I thought that there was an error, and I looked back to see. And then once I started really thinking about it, there really just isn't any suspense there. It's really weird.
I think that's so interesting just from an artistic standpoint, because what you've done, and obviously this was your intent, is to quantify exactly what the elements are that make a good movie versus a bad movie. And I think these two things really stand out. You know, when I think of my favorite movies that are action-based, most of the things that make them so good are the suspense, you know, with a little bit of action. And when I think of terrible action movies, the thing that makes them so bad is the overwhelming amount of action versus any suspense whatsoever, any wonder of what's going to happen. And I think that's really telling in your chart here.
Yeah, and I think there's an interesting distinction here too, that there's a difference, at least the way I coded it, between a scene that has action but has a definitive mood versus a scene that is just action. Is it really a shovel for action? That you could look at the end of Jedi, where Vader and Luke are fighting. There's a lot of action there, but that's not really what it's about. That there's this big interplay between them going on, all this going on behind it, that the action is just there to kind of push that forward. Whereas when you just have, you know, a bunch of people that you don't care about fighting a bunch of other people you don't care about, with tons of explosions and all this other sort of stuff, it's just action for the sake of action.
Right.
It's like porn.
Well, sort of. It is. In that way. Absolutely. Where it's just, it has no other purpose or redeeming quality.
Yeah.
Yeah, gratuitous, yeah. And excessive and all that. And quite frankly, offensive to the senses. Paul, were you in your doing this doing all these watching of the films? That's the worst way to say that. But when you were watching all these films,
and you're watching
were you in your watching of the films, in your reading of these texts, as we say, were you just doing this sort of flying solo, or did you enlist people to kind of help catch, you know, those instances where you think, oh, I think this is one instance of X, or I would consider this scene tense versus not tense, or whatever.
Yeah, what's your iterator reliability?
Thank you.
The iterator reliability is one, because no, I did do it solo.
It's all solo. Okay. So, no one was gonna walk down this road with you.
No.
Okay. And then how many times did you have to watch each of these films?
I did it once each. I did end up pausing them quite a bit. And then saying, like, okay, now what was that about? What was that about? Or what character was that? I think that was kind of telling too, in that it was a lot easier to do most of the movies until I got to episode 3. I think it took me about twice as long as any of the other ones, because I had to keep pausing so much to try to really figure out what just happened or what's going on screen, or just a lot more stuff was going on a lot faster.
And I think that's kind of what's so troubling about the films, is clearly there's a lot of activity, and then at the same time it's like you're not really processing it, or it doesn't give you a chance to think about it in an odd way.
Yeah, I mean, you're joking about some of the wipes and cuts that they do in some of the original movies, but yeah, even those split seconds where you just get time to digest it a little bit more, the cuts are so much harder in some of these earlier movies, that it goes right from one thing directly into the next thing.
Right. Well, and especially when they're going from, like, treaties and trade groups, and you don't necessarily know who or why someone is important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That doesn't help. So.
So I'm just browsing through here, and I'm looking at your post, which is 2.5.
About love, yeah.
Yes, about love. Fascinating. You've described in a number of minutes the amount of time that the couples in question are alone together. Anakin and Amidala are together alone for ridiculous amounts of time.
Yeah, it's about a quarter of the movie.
Yep.
Felt like it too.
Yeah. But Han and Leia are together for much more brief moments in time. They have several minutes together in a couple of blocks, but they don't add up to nearly as much as Anakin Amidala. And mm-hmm, I think mm-hmm. if I were to take an unscientific poll here of the five of us on the podcast and say which of these relationships on screen is more compelling, I think we'd all say Han and Leia, except Jordan, who might say Luke and Leia.
Yeah, did you add that into the mix? How long were they alone together?
I didn't end up coding for that. They don't spend much time together in Empire, actually.
Yeah, they actually don't.
Yeah, and once again, this is just another way of showing us exactly what we already know. You know, that you don't have to push a certain theme of a movie. I mean, one of the things that I think you could characterize the prequels with is that they're very didactic. And maybe it's because they were programmed for a younger audience. So they wanted to be a bit more heavy-handed and say, hey, this is what you have to focus on. This is the important part. You know, they're made so that you don't have to think as much, or that you don't have to invest as much to get the point out of it, because there's so much there, which kind of goes to your earlier point about, you know, how much information you have, and then, you know, not having time to digest it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there is an interesting point there, and I think the fact that you can kind of say that, you know, it's for kids comes off a lot. But when you really get into it, too, a lot of it, even episode two, for example, like, even if you're not looking at the love story or any of that, a lot of the rest of it is just, even to me, is really confusing. And to imagine that a kid, that as a child, that I would have been able to sit down and digest this movie, and all this stuff about taxes and trade blockades and mm-hmm. Senatorial and you know, rules of senates.
What? Right, the Jedi Council
don't know Robert's Rules of Order.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I kept a copy of Hobbes's Leviathan underneath my pillow at night. But...
that was just because it's helping your scoliosis. That's all that was.
Just fast forward to the parts in the movie where they talk about the Senate.
You know, I agree that it's more complex. Although, to be honest, I didn't get a lot of the sub stories in Star Wars till I got older. You know, like I never realized that. Anything about there being like a relationship between Luke, Leia, and Han, I never even paid attention to that. I always just cared about the lightsaber, and like anytime they would show like the chicken walkers or the AT-ATs, like I loved
giant robots blowing things up.
Yeah, and the like flying the snow speeder around the, you know, to trip them up and everything. Like, mm-hmm. Those are my favorite scenes, and like they still to me are what stick out about those movies. Although I got more of the subtext and like more of the, you know, conflict that the people experience later, you know, but.
Well, even if you talk about like the Battle of Hoth, which I think is a great action scene.
Excellent.
There is still, I think going back to the mood is really interesting, and that there is still a lot of mood present there. You know, with Dak, Luke's gunner, getting injured, and then the snowspeeder crashing, and then it getting crushed. It's
right. You made a point of mentioning that in the post, right? That they introduce him almost to say like he's the hope, and then they kill him.
Yeah, his line is something. It's I feel like I could take on the whole empire myself,
and, yeah, and then it's just, like boom, he's dead.
Yeah, and like minutes later, he's unconscious on the ground. Luke's trying to pull him out. He doesn't. He gets crushed by an AT-AT, and it's not even that subtle. But I mean, it's not meant to be. Like it's really hitting you over the head that they're in trouble. They mm-hmm. need to get off this planet. Like they cannot take on the Empire at this point,
right?
And this whole thing actually reading
the subtlety. Oh, go for it.
I was just gonna say, I'm going a little bit maybe beyond this conversation, but the reading of all these posts made me, and I told you this last weekend, I think, when I talked to you, Paul, but it made me happy that George Lucas didn't make the original trilogy like 10 years ago, mm-hmm. like that Star Wars came out when it did, because he had to rely on like a good story because the effects weren't great, and mm-hmm. he couldn't do all this CGI junk, which clearly he wanted to do, because when he went back and, you know, revitalized or whatever the originals, remastered them, he added in just junk. Like there wasn't anything added that was of value. It was just like, oh, let's put another CGI creature in the background here, or let's add, like you said, Jabba the Hutt, just because we can now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It didn't add anything to the stories at all.
And I think it's really interesting, too, because if you look at even A New Hope, the effects in it are phenomenal, even by today's standards. Yeah. Even if you're looking at the theatrical cut.
Yeah.
And the amount of work that he put into that and the amount of time and effort that he spent on that is really important, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. But you're right that as CGI moved in there, it's too easy.
He became fascinated with CGI, with visual porn, or whatever you want to say, CGI porn.
Distractions or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what's interesting is that you can almost get caught, reminiscing about the older films, you can almost get caught in the "that's quaint" trap. Of thinking about how they made the films, just thinking about it. Oh, they used flashbulb tubes for lightsaber hilts, and when they created those, that's very quaint. But it's not quaint; it's innovative.
What they did
nowadays, or in the more recent films, was they just went to, they didn't quite do this, but they basically went to like a 3D printer and just said lightsaber, press the button, and out came this really mass-produced generic sort of shiny version of a lightsaber, and it wasn't at all innovative.
I'm sure you could call
some of the effects that they created innovative, but in that they were innovative for computer graphics. But to not actually create them, in real life or do something that wasn't dreamt possible, they just did it on a larger scale, and I think the innovation is, not only endearing, but it's, like you guys said, it holds up a little better. Like even going back and watching I think it was 2 actually that I watched a little bit of the other day. The graphics don't hold up, but I've never once considered, Darth Vader's mask, in the previous films, in the 4, 5, and 6, to be something that wasn't real. It was there. It was tangible, almost.
Or even the droids like R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Absolutely.
So here's a question, and maybe this is a good one to end on because we're getting a little short on time. But and this is a question anybody gets when they take on any sort of endeavor, is that there's a bias involved, right? And we already mentioned coding and things like that, or reliability or whatever. But you mentioned at the beginning that you were trying to quantify why the new ones were worse than the old ones, right? So you had like a mindset. So that brings up the question of, do you think that influenced how negative you came away with your results, or do you think, and maybe on the flip side, in this process, did you find anything redeeming or that you didn't think before really was that redeeming about the new ones?
I think that's a fair question and a good question. I think that going into it, I didn't expect it to be as bad as it was going to be.
Ouch.
Especially this last week, this one that I finished today, and I kind of touched on that at the start of today's post, that I felt like Phantom Menace was often considered the worst of the prequels, so I felt like putting that up against New Hope was kind of unfair. And Empire is just such a tight movie and just so well put together, that putting clones against it felt unfair. But Jedi has a lot of problems, Sith is usually billed as the strongest of that prequel trilogy. So I thought this week was going to be a lot more fair, and I was hoping that I would find some things that they would either show the same sort of trends or that Sith might actually come away better with. Mm-hmm. And what I walked away with was that Sith is really the worst movie, that it's just really, really bad. So I think I certainly had some biases, but I think these movies underperformed, even to my low expectation.
So is Sith the one where Anakin goes in and kills all the Tusken Raiders?
That's the That's like three quarters.
Spoilers.
Episode two.
Oh, that's in episode
right, yeah,
two.
That's like kind of his first moment when he turns.
Mm-hmm. That's like. Mm-hmm. Like, if they could make more of the movie that, like, more of the prequels that, like, you seeing him just be completely crazy, like, I think I would have liked them more.
Well, I think
I was expecting to see a much more nuanced, like, development of Vader, you know, versus what actually happened, and ended up focusing so much on the love story that it didn't gel for me. Like, I didn't see him turn truly into this evil character that he's supposed to be, you know, and that was one glimpse of it.
Yeah, and I think so, that scene following it, too, where he just kind of loses it in explaining it, is one of the few in two and three where you really actually do feel the emotion of the characters, I think. And a lot of the rest of it, you either don't know what they're feeling or you don't care about what they're feeling.
Right.
Well, that's something that I've always wondered about, and I wonder if maybe you might have some insight into this. What is it about Lucas that has the ability to render great actors completely inept on screen in his films?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's definitely, you see hints of good acting in there a lot of places. I even during Phantom Menace, I was trying to think, because a lot of people blame, I'm going to forget his name, Jake Lloyd, was that the...
Yep.
The kid who plays Anakin as a boy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people blame him and say, oh, he was bad acting. And even if you try to picture other better child actors, like Haley Joel Osment or someone like that, in the same scene delivering those lines, like, there's just, it's hard to imagine the lines as they're written delivered better.
Yeah, it's really, really difficult dialogue.
Yeah.
In that,
yeah, there was a famous
bad.
Dig. Yeah, there was a famous dig that Harrison Ford got on George Lucas. He said, you can write it, but you can't say it.
Yep. I think there was actually, on episode one, too, there's actually a really interesting point that I came away with, that when I was looking at the number of characters and things like that, I was using IMDb to figure out names and things. And I hadn't realized that Keira Knightley actually played the double for Natalie Portman in a lot of scenes, and not just as one of the handmaidens, but as the queen. And when I started looking at that, that was kind of mind-blowing to me, that Natalie Portman gets a lot of flack for all these just dull, boring lines and delivery in episode one. And there is a lot of dull, boring delivery of those lines from the Queen. But if you look, it's always when Keira Knightley is playing the Queen.
Oh, interesting.
And Natalie Portman is always on the side in those scenes. And when Natalie Portman's doing it, it's actually pretty decently done, and I think Keira Knightley got away pretty scot-free on that one.
Yeah.
But that blew my mind when I was able to pick up on that.
As a wrap-up to this, I just want to challenge the listeners to go through and count the Oscar nominations that appear on screen. The Oscar nominations for each of the actors that appear on screen, and then try to figure out why none of those could add up to any decent performance for one of the actors.
Yeah,
I can't figure it out. So, well, Paul, we want to thank you so much for being with us and sharing this. And once again, you can find Paul on Twitter at Skeptical Stats. I'm sorry, is that right? No, did I say that wrong?
I always have to search for it myself too. I can never remember.
Yeah, at Skeptical Stats. And you can find his blog, The Skeptical Statistician, at theskepticalstatistician.blogspot.com, where you can read all of this and other very exciting posts relating to statistics of everyday things.
Yeah, next week it looks like it might be Price is Right.
Oh,
yes.
That sounds terrific. Nice. The Price is Right.
Which is just a statistical honey hole. It's just so much.
So that about does it for this week's podcast. Thanks to you, the listener, for listening. And as always, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, at our blog, which is stuffsmartpplike.com, and on Twitter at smartpplike. Let's close it out by getting everyone's last word for the week. Ben, last word.
Obsequious.
Ed, last word.
Concatenate.
Jordan, last word.
Callipygian.
Paul, last word.
That you can give to elliptical cats.
Nice. Did you get that, by the way?
I did.
Oh, do you have it now? Oh, so I will know. I'll never be able to have that.
Oh, no, not the... I didn't get the handle. I got the picture.
Oh. Okay.
No, I got the handle.
Oh. Oh, you did? Really?
Yeah, dog. Nice. I'm already tweeting at you.
So jealous.
And my last word is ridiculousary. All right, so for Stuff Smart People Like...
I'm Ben.
I'm Ed.
I'm Jordan.
And I'm Dean. We think it's smart. So should you.
So should you.
So should you. So should you. So should you. So should you.